Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Monday Night Raw After Show here on Wrestling Inc. And you've got the triple threat of Triple J, Justin Labar, Jack Farmer, and Corduroy, Jimmy Corderas. And have we got a show for you? I like to say that this is the start of WrestleMania season, so let's get it going. How are you guys doing, Justin Labar? How you feeling?
Start of WrestleMania season. You're one of those guys that's putting Christmas lights up after at Labor Day or something.
Yeah, after 4th of July.
That's a long road to Mania. I still say we keep it at Rumble. All right, because look, December's always I've seen some wacky things in December. December's always a weird month sometimes in WWE programming. Not always weird, bad. There's been some memorable title changes in December, but December's a weird time. I don't know if I'm going to go to Mania season just yet.
Jimmy, it's Mania season, right? Are you ready for Hollywood? Are you ready to get going? We're starting this road trip. Did you get some snacks?
Not yet. It's still too early. I'm still the big Rumble. I agree with Justin. I look forward to the Rumble every year. It has almost surpassed SummerSlam as the number two pay-per-view because it is the big lead up to WrestleMania, which is the big event of the year, right? So you can make that argument.
I'll be honest. I've been a Royal Rumble. Royal Rumble is my personal favorite as a fan, my favorite show. Just because it's so crazy. It's so anything that happens.
And the first ever Royal Rumble took place just down the road from me here in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada.
Are you going to be back for Royal Rumble this year? They should have you there then.
Oh, no. I'm fine watching it from the comforts of my couch, sofa, whatever you want to call it.
Well, by the way, I don't think you should be there to watch it. I don't even think you should be there to ref it. I think you should enter the Rumble, Jimmy. I think you could win this thing. Who has more in-ring experience than Jimmy Corderas?
Well, I know how to hide better than anybody else. That's this for sure.
Yeah, I guess if you can hide in the ring while wearing a striped shirt, you definitely know how to blend it.
There you go. See, that's a good idea. If you're wearing the striped shirt, nobody's going to eliminate you because they don't think you're entered.
Plus, if you're Jimmy, though, and if he's at the Rumble, then he can't be here after the Rumble on the podcast with us. That's going to be a lit post Rumble podcast if it's the three of us.
Yeah, you're going to have to be there. That one's going to be can't miss. But we got a show tonight. Before we get into it, though, we got some news as always. Always like to chat up the news. So Roman Reigns reportedly was upset with Kevin Owens after the War Games match. WWE Survivor Series War Games saw the end of the dissension between the bloodline as Sami Zayn showed his loyalty to the group, turning on his former best friend Kevin Owens in the process. Although the ending of the match seemed to go off without a hitch to fans watching the show close, according to Fightful Select, that wasn't necessarily the case. Before the match's final sequence, Universal Champ Roman Reigns and Owens trade blows with each other, with Fightful reporting that there was an unplanned spot involving their battle that made the Tribal Chief upset. According to Fightful, Reigns walked backstage after the match, complained about a possible ruptured eardrum, furious with how the spot didn't happen the way it was supposed to, detailing that Reigns' issue was expletive-filled. Though it doesn't seem like there will be any extended heat, it was more heat in the moment. Justin Labar, this sounds like it's kind of much ado about nothing. Just someone probably got popped and was a little crabby in the moment, but it sounds like nothing to worry about.
Yeah, you use the phrase heat of the moment, and I think that's probably very applicable here. I don't know. I saw this report and read this earlier. I have not gone back to watch the ending sequence to see if I could spot what this might be referring to. But by all the context clues, it does sound like, again, just heat of the moment. You know, look, I mean, if I think fans sometimes forget, like, you know, yes, because everybody knows that, okay, that this is a cooperation to make this dance, this two to tango, or in this case, you know, 10 to tango, however many guys were out there, you know, but there still is adrenaline. There still is physicality. There still is competitiveness of still to be as good, if not better. I mean, you want to protect and take care, and we're all working towards the same goal. But if people think there's no athletic spirit involved in that ring just because everybody knows the outcome, you're dead wrong. And so I think that can happen, you know. Whatever the case may be, a little heat of the moment. I don't think anything unusual. I'm sure Jimmy has seen thousands of those situations where it's real hot for a moment, then everybody gets a chance to walk away, get a drink of water, pace the hallway a few times, maybe even watch it back, and you move on.
Yeah, Jimmy, have you seen something like this happen before backstage?
Okay, where do I begin? there were some issues, especially I remember refereeing a match with the late, great Eddie Guerrero and Kurt Angle, and both of them were such fierce, fierce competitors that, you know, the adrenaline, the juices were flowing with both guys. And I couldn't tell you exactly what it was in the match, even though I was in the ring with them, that set them off. But once they got to the back, Eddie was furious, and then Kurt came back and they got into a shouting match and they actually got into a physical confrontation. And thank goodness Big Show was there to separate everything, because all he has to do is just reach down, grab them and pull them apart. Like literally.
I imagine just gripping their heads and like lifting them like a cartoon.
it was incredible. But you know, like, what am I supposed to do? I'm not going to jump in there. I'm going to get my butt kicked. But anyways, without help, that is, if there was other people there, you know, obviously I would do my best. But it's just I think Justin is right. It's a heat of the moment thing. You know, you're so hamped up. The adrenaline juices are flowing and you're hoping everything. At the end of the day, whatever happened in the ring that supposedly set him off, Roman was professional and did his job in the ring. And as Justin said, also, it's part of the business. It happens. You don't plan it to happen. You know, it does. You get hit a little stiff. You get a little snug, as Miz mentioned at one point tonight, you know, and stuff like that. So it just happens. It's part of the business. Unfortunately, yeah. It's unfortunate. You don't want to see guys get confrontational, but at the same time, you know, it's, you're human.
Yeah. And just, you know, again, adding to it, you think about top guys like Roman, you know, and you think about this, you know, we're joked a minute ago, Jack, about how it's already the start of Mania season for you. Well, if you're a guy like Roman Reigns, you're a top guy, yes, you get treated very well. You have great accommodations. You obviously, he only works a certain amount of dates at this point. But if you're Roman Reigns and you know, okay, I am both world champions for this company, I am the leader of this company right now. And by the way, I'm sure Roman has an idea of what is coming down the pike for him with Rumble and then the all important WrestleMania match. And so when you're in that situation, even more so when the company is depending on you and you are in the sweet spot, you've been working 800 something days as a record holding champion. You know, if something sets you off in a moment that you think might have just put you in physical danger of being sidelined and derailing plans, again, heat of the moment, you're going to take it a little more personally than probably whatever was intended. And when probably nothing was intended, it was just an accident. So yeah, you got to keep in mind, this is people, it's these guys' livelihoods. And they're well compensated, well taken care of, but they do not want to see themselves get detoured on whatever the storyline is, especially if you are the top guy like Roman Reigns.
Right. Yeah. And like you, as you had mentioned, not just the top guy, but like the top guy at this point, too. So, yeah, probably not going to hear much about that. But yeah, big shout out to Roman Reigns for finishing and not making an obvious thing about it during that. If it was as bad as it was bad enough to make him have an issue. I should say. So we also got some news about the future of the traditional Survivor Series matchups. And they're asked if we were going to, if they were done or they were going to come back. And Triple H said, I don't think we're done with anything. I think that when we look at it together as a whole, it's about what's best for our fans in the moment. Sometimes stuff needs a break for a while. I think implying saying that, hey, they're put it on hold for a little bit, but that doesn't mean that it's done forever. Jimmy, I'm a fan of Survivor Series matches. Mm-hmm. I know Survivor Series has gone by the wayside over the past few years, but I'm glad to know that we might see them come back at some point.
Yeah, I like the traditional Survivor Series matches. I like the concept of it. I like it happening once a year to make it feel special. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it happens to include two sides that have an issue going, all the much better. Like I remember as, again, dating myself, as I said before with you guys, being there for the very first Survivor Series, it was, you know, five tag teams versus five tag teams, or, you know, five on five, just traditional were there issues involved with it? You know, sometimes there isn't, sometimes there is, but when there is an issue involved, it makes it that much more special.
Yeah, Justin, as I was watching today, and we'll get into obviously the big tag match that happened, I was thinking Judgment Day versus OC feels like it's ready for a Survivor Series match, if not for the fact that that ship just sailed.
Yeah, and I think what Triple H was trying to say is it all, it's just a nothing ever has to be put away permanently for, you know, it's just a matter of what fits this year when you get around that time of year of the calendar with what's going on your roster. You know, if you truly have naturally some stables that really fit perfectly, then that works to have War Games. But if maybe it's a situation where the way the cards get dealt, you can put together a Survivor Series match that's half talent that are full-time roster members, and maybe the other half is a few one-offs that you get to pluck just because those few one-offs happen to be free agents or happen, you know, or healthy or whatever the case may be. It's just kind of all circumstance. And so I think, you know, I think that kind of sums up some of the breath of fresh air in his young current creative leadership reign of the main roster, is that where it felt like Vince might have got so stuck in the ways of things, and it worked, damn it, here, so it's certainly going to work now. Triple H is much more open-minded of, you know, let's keep the toolbox open, and let's not be afraid to pull and grab this wrench. You know what I mean? I'm going to burn the analogy there, but so I don't know. And I want to say too, on a bigger scale, I'm so glad that they did the press conference. You know, I was fortunate enough to take part in some of those in the arena after NXT takeovers. You know, I'd done many of the pre-takeover media calls that he would do when he was in charge of NXT. I'm really glad to see that he's taking that media transparency philosophy and applying it to Raw and SmackDown, where of course he's so much busier now than he ever was. But that's really good. You know, it's they're not always going to give you like the comment you want. They're not always going to reveal everything, of course not. But the fact that he at least makes the effort to allow people to ask him a question, and even if that answer is a no answer, even if that answer is just a blunt no comment, just the fact that he puts and gives the wrestling media the opportunity to pose the question to his face, and then he can give them a no comment or whatever he wants to give them, it goes a long way, and it helps. And shout out, of course, to our own Issa, who was part of it, and I saw her video making the round, so good on her. So I just love the fact that he's keeping that. I think that's really important for the long term moving forward with where media and with where just the nature of social media and the world is going. You need to be front and center. I think it is one thing that AEW's done from the jump that was always good, was their amount of media transparency. Went a little crazy in September, of course, but overall, it is a good thing to do.
Shout out Wrestling Inc. looking strong, by the way, at that press conference there. Liam, friend of the Wrestling Inc., Issa, friend of Wrestling Inc., and I'm sure was Nick there? I didn't actually watch the full press conference, but I'm sure Nick was probably doing something there. But in any case, strong showing. And yeah, Issa breaking a little bit of news too with her question. Mm-hmm. So good for Issa. Let's move on. Let's get into this show. But let's also say thank you to everyone who is listening after the recording, whether it be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whether you're watching YouTube. Like, comment, share, subscribe. Let us know in the comments what you thought of the different things we chat about today, what you liked, what you didn't like. Also, as Justin always says, let us know where you're watching or listening or how you're listening. That's always fun to see as well. But also, like I said, 5-star review us every once in a while. Why don't you? It's the least you can do. But also, if you're here live, thank you so much for being in the chat. We got David, we got Adam, we got Justine, Night One, Tuck, Graf, Himanshu, Ian, Dylan, Baby Ice, Eddie in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Ethan Cruz, Jakey Bakey, Ricky, and Steven and Donald, and there was one more up here, Adam as well. Brad, thank you guys so much for joining us live and being a part of the chat. Let's talk about wrestling. Let's talk about Raw. We're 15 minutes in. Let's dive right into the show. We start the show. The man has come around and she's going around and chats with Bobby and Zachary in the crowd, and then says she's going to slap the heads off of everyone. Bailey comes back to some Basie booze, and Bailey says she's not appreciated. So Becky says, let's fight. Damage Control comes down the steps, and we get a backstage brawl. Jimmy, I am so glad that the man is back.
I am too, and I enjoyed it. You know, you hit that music. She came out, got that huge reaction, and I know I'm going to take some heat for this. Here's the Canadian heat magnet starting again. The only thing I didn't appreciate, I wanted Becky Lynch to be Becky Lynch, not Becky Lynch. It felt like she was playing up to the crowd a little bit too much. She didn't need to. Yes, I'm here because of you. I love you guys. Everything I do is for you. And then she goes out into the crowd and really, you know, like you said, with Bob and Zachary and all these guys and just hanging out. And I think she played up to the crowd a little bit too much. I want her to be a little more edgy. Sure, she can be appreciative of the crowd and appreciative of the audience for backing her. But at the same time, she's going to continue to be the man. And if you choose to like me, you choose to like me. And if you don't, that's your prerogative, that kind of deal. I'd like to see that from her more than playing up to the crowd the way she did tonight.
I don't know. I love that she went in the crowd. That was a highlight for me personally. Justin, what did you think?
Well, I mean, I too like that edge that the man brings. So I certainly hear what Jimmy's saying, but I have to say it's hard for me to argue that you should change anything about how this went off because she does something that is not often done. She's in the crowd with a live mic, no swarm of security around her. She's just floating up and down the lower bowl ramp, cutting a promo and then engaging with the fans, which, by the way, Bobby and Zachary were not plants. Those were legit fans, which makes it all the funnier because you also then think about the amount of things that could have gone wrong with this. But you know, the crowd was getting, you know, when she, you know, when Bayley comes out and Bayley starts cutting the heel promo and talking about peasants and this and that, and then Becky, you know, don't talk about Bob that way. The crowd was chanting for Becky. They were behind her. So, you know, I like the edge, like Jimmy said, but this was a nice, maybe just welcome back. It was a nice getting her. It was a nice way to stand out. This was certainly an opening of Raw that we don't see regularly. So I thought this mostly positive for me.
I will say, you know that these guys weren't plants because Bob, shame on you, playing on his phone the whole time Becky was standing right next to it. Bob, you're part of the show. Get off your phone. What are you doing, buddy?
He's taking selfies.
He was going live. I'm sure if somebody searches hard enough, you can find his TikTok or Snapchat or his Twitter or whatever the hell he was going live on.
I do think it was fun that I was watching this, I was thinking this is like a lifetime memory for so many people, though. Even the people that she just high-fived, like, that's one of those things that people will be talking about. Like, yeah, I was there one time and like Becky came out and high-fived me. I thought that was I personally really liked it. I also liked the visual of Damage Control coming down the steps and Becky being blocked in. And I love the fight. I love the chaos. I actually love this entire segment, to be totally honest. To me, it kicked off perfect.
No, I didn't have a problem with the physicality and where it led to. It's just, like I said, for me, I thought it was just a little bit playing up to the crowd too much and not being that edgy persona that we've gotten in the past. I was looking forward to seeing more of that. That's all.
Well, we have plenty of time for that, we'll get into that. But things continue on as this was, for some reason, no commercial breaks in the first hour, which was a little interesting.
They announced a couple hours earlier, I think Byron Saxton did, and then they touted on social that the first hour is going to be commercial free.
Mm-hmm. Was there a reason for it or just for funsies? Because usually it's like when Dynamite's moved to Monday or like something. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's for a reason.
I mean, you know, they had Monday Night Football to contend with, which they do every week at this time of year. I mean, it's the Steelers and Colts who neither doing great. So I don't think it was that. I think it was just maybe just a way, again, coming off of a pay-per-view or premium live event, just trying to keep people engaged, especially when you're starting with the entire Bloodline, right, or all of Bloodline with minus Roman. You know, when that's off in the early part of the show, you want to keep people gravitated. And they also clearly had the first hour heavily sponsored by this Violent Night movie. Mm-hmm. So even though it was commercial, you know, we weren't getting the 3-minute blocks of commercials, we were still getting cutaways to the quick snippets of the movie. And so obviously from a financial standpoint, they clearly had something covered, allowing them to feel like they could do this, them and the USA Network.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm happy for no commercials. I was just curious. Usually when they do that, there's like a reason for it. But we get Rhea Ripley versus Mia Yim. They finally collide after being at odds for a few weeks. Yim eventually gets control, but is distracted by Dom, allowing Rhea to get control. AJ storms the ring and attacks Dom. Match is thrown out. Judgment Day shows up, and we get a post-match brawl. AJ says, let's fight about it. Now it's an eight-person tag match. And again, we have massive stars with massive history, but it's Dom and Rhea that seem to get the biggest reactions from the crowd here. Some big, fun moments, but it ends with Rhea hitting the Riptide on Yim and her team getting the win. Justin, I was kind of with you before, but now I am fully on board the we need to decide what Mia Yim's name is. Today, I don't know why, it really bothered me.
Yeah, now they attach it as like the mention or whatever. Like her, like it's a, that's like now she's mentioned Mia Yang, Mia Yim. I don't know. I'll say this though, visually tonight, it really came together. The visual of her, and she's color coded with her OC brothers, and you know, I don't know if it's because I don't know. You know, I know the OC that they have the Japanese writing on their gear. I know Mia Yim is not Japanese; she's Korean, but there's something that just fits. Tonight when I saw all of them together, I was like, you know what? This was a good call. If the company was determined to sign and get Mia Yim back anyways, because she's a talent and you need something for it creatively, this was a good call. So I like the way, despite them losing tonight overall, I like the way she looks. This is really starting to click with me. And then, of course, you know, I've been saying the praises these last weeks of Rhea Ripley, especially with the Judgment Day, you know, really firing all cylinders. There's just something. There's just a magical thing to dislike about Rhea and Dom together. Well, I don't know about together, but just the mommy poppy style. It's really good. It's really good.
Yeah, it's funny because it's so implied that they're a couple, but I don't know if they ever actually say they're a couple or do anything to like confirm they're a couple, even though
it's kind of like the mystery is better because it leaves your imagination. Is she just mentoring him on how to operate on the dark side, on the evil side? Is there a sexual underlying the mystery, the unsaid makes it better. It's because it allows your mind to wander.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And Jimmy, I'd love your thoughts on that. But also, I feel I like all the pieces of this, but I was thinking as they're talking about this all started because they have history back in Japan and the Bullet Club. And I was thinking this didn't start with the Bullet Club. This started because Edge targeted Finn and AJ, mm-hmm. and then Finn joined Judgment Day and AJ felt crabby about it. And then I was thinking, wow, has this been going on since April? rivalry. Where do you stand with this rivalry at this point?
I'm enjoying it because one of the things, like you said, they're doing is they're giving us the backstory. They're giving us the history where before they wouldn't mention that this rivalry has dated back to Japan. They would never mention that on television before. They would come up with a story to cover that. So they're giving us a backstory which fits in perfectly with this. And you can make the connection to Edge as well. But at the same time, you know, people are kind of, he's kind of leaving everybody's mind. So when the time does come for him, if he does come to return, that'll make it that much more special, I think. And what was the other point you wanted to, you were talking about?
Where do you think this is? How much more do you think you can take of, or how much more do you think we can get out of this rivalry? Or do you think it's kind of played its course?
No, you can get a lot more out of this rivalry, especially tonight when we had the men and the women mix in the same match, and even have Mia body slamming, Finn and stuff like that. So there was an interaction between male and female, which before you would never see in the WWE. At least for the last while.
Yeah. To your point, Justin, I want to throw this back to you as far as Mia Yim goes and Rhea Ripley. Mia Yim pulling some offense on the fellas. Do you think that kind of raised her value in a way it did with Rhea Ripley when she body slammed Gallows?
Yeah, I think it can. It can. And I'm real. I get kind of picky about the doing the intergender stuff, but I think if spots are picked right, I'm a big fan of the women getting an offensive maneuver on the guys and the guys selling it. I think it can be, that can be beneficial if it's the right woman. And Rhea is the right kind of woman, and Mia is the right kind of woman. Mm-hmm. And when I mean that, I mean they're characters. So, yeah. And real quick, I want to give a shout out. I was just looking at Twitter. I want to give a shout out to one of our listeners at MadMike232, who tweeted us. He said, "I'll be listening tomorrow morning as I deliver the mail, staying up to finish Raw. Already late. You guys have no idea how much listening to y'all helps the day go by." I love and I love our local mail carriers. Yes. So shout out to Michael for doing that grind on his feet, no matter what the weather is, delivering the mail. But awesome that we can he's taking us along on his route. So, Mike, if you're listening to this on Tuesday morning, hope the mail route's going well.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah, what a great message. It's always appreciated when you hear stuff.
It is.
You don't hear it as much as you think you would when you do a show like this. But good stuff all around.
Yeah. One last thing about Judgment Day. You know, hats off to Dom Mysterio, because he's really, really taking it up a notch. And again, showing you that character is so important to get people invested in you. He gets legit boos now. He is a great heel. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, him and Ripley are just a phenomenal pairing that if you had told me a year ago they'd be a great pairing, I'd be like, that sounds terrible. But here they are. I also really like Damian Priest and Gallows and their interactions and this the two big guys of the group throwing down. I thought that came across really cool to see as well. And Dom's still kind of, I feel like still waiting to see him just get pummeled. And I'm excited for when that moment happens and who gets to do it.
Daddy.
No, let's hope so. Let's hope so. We'll see. So we move on and we get another group comes out. This time it's the Bloodline. And they say there are no cracks in the armor and everyone's on the same page and they're all hugging. But Solo didn't go for a hug here. KO comes out and says, "I don't blame you, Sammy. I just never want to be near you again." They both agree, but Jay says he'll fight Kevin Owens in this case later tonight. And Justin, this is just the Bloodline is just the, I don't want to get into hyperbole, but it's been a long time since there has been a story or angle or whatever you want to call it that has been as good, as long, and as big as the Bloodline.
Yeah. Particularly with the dynamic of Sammy and the Bloodline and Sammy and Jay. The last thing I can recall on WWE programming that I would compare this to in terms of something that, you know, you might have just thrown it against the wall in a creative meeting, said, yeah, we'll go with it for the next cycle to the next pay-per-view, whatever, but then it just explodes, would be the Jericho, Kevin Owens, best friends, the friendship thing. You know, that when it started, was not supposed to turn into the thing it did for the length it did. And then when the split finally happened, you know, it was a big deal. I that's what I compare this to. And then it's great. You know, you love it. You love it because it's just compelling TV and it keeps people going. Probably back prior to that, we could dig back to Daniel Bryan Kane. Just those oddball things the oddball marriage things that work, you know, Riddle and Orton to a lesser extent recently. But the challenge then becomes, again, especially when it's a heel dominant group like the Bloodlines, you almost have two versions of the Bloodline, right? You have the version of the Bloodline when Roman's there and it is serious business for the most part, and it is Roman, and it does take on that more mafia kind of feel that we've compared this to. But then when you have nights like tonight where it's not Roman, where it is the rest of them, it can be a hard task to keep them in the heel position and the crowd not to cheer them because they are being so entertained by the antics. So just all things to kind of watch for, but it all results in the same thing, which is very exciting TV.
It's very NWO in that regard, where there are these guys that just keep destroying everybody, but now we just love them for it. The NWO is never as funny as Sami Zayn is, but Jimmy, that's where I want to ask you is, I think a lot of people like Sami Zayn is funny, he's entertaining, but I'm watching this today and I've been watching the past few weeks and Sami Zayn, dare I say, is a great actor. Like he is like, there's like emotion in what he's doing. I think that's the real hook for why we like him is he's being silly. But then when he cuts these promos, like it feels like he's really like, hey, I knew you didn't like me before. I know you hated me. Like it doesn't feel like he's going for the jokes. It feels like he's being a real person.
That's the beauty of it. And that's what works, is believing in yourself and believing in what you're doing. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot from this group, especially the Usos. You're seeing it from them. You're seeing it from Sammy, and in a different way, obviously, from Sammy and the Usos. And now you guys mentioned Solo being there, kind of stoic with his arms crossed and stuff like that. That all blends together because everybody's not the same. And yes, Sammy can be funny at times and use the Usy comment and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time, he brings it all back to, you know, it's just a nice variety, and they're keeping it fresh, and it feels like they believe exactly what they're doing. And it translates that way across on the screen, like you said, Jack.
Yeah. And I want to admit this, probably, you know, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, whenever I made the comments, this was kind of my opinion at the time. When Sammy was of that version at the time in WWE space, I was like, this guy is just so generic. You know, I didn't like the look. I thought he looked like a cab driver or a paper boy with the hat. I couldn't figure out. I was like, yeah, he's good in the ring, but if you're in WWE, almost everybody's good in the ring. I just couldn't get on it. And now looking, knowing what we know now, you know, certainly a lot of it is just positioning and opportunity and getting, you know, good stuff to work off of, or getting opportunity to, you know, to getting an opportunity just to do anything. He blocked me somewhere in that time on Twitter. I'm blocked on Twitter. So I can't even tweet him and give him a sorry or all the flowers I want to give him now, because I'm still blocked, I think. But I got to say, he was given whatever opportunity he was given when this all, and I can't remember even how this started, but he was given this opportunity to, okay, we're going to toss you in and you're going to be the wannabe Bloodline member. And I mean, I can't say enough of how he has, as Jim Ross has famously said, Sami Zayn has maximized his TV minutes and just carved out such a position for him. And I mean, job well done. So I can't tweet at him. So I at least want to put it on the podcast world. Great job, Sami Zayn.
Right. Someday you'll get unblocked, just like Edge will someday unblock me. I hope. But I do. You said something earlier, Justin, about how it's like two different bloodlines. And as you've been saying, it's been kind of rattling around in my brain for the short little period of time. And I almost like that. And because it feels like, you know, like when you have a job, you know, let's say us, we're all joking around, and then the boss comes on, and then we're like, oh, shoot, like get serious real quick. And I think we all kind of can feel that. But then when your boss is as terrifying as a Roman Reigns, it's like a different level. And I think the fact that they let us see that and feel that makes us connect more to them with that. I think the two bloodlines is actually a good thing in the way it's working in that case.
And having two bloodlines, basically, when you have two shows in Raw or SmackDown, and again, we are on a long stretch until we have the next premium live event being Rumble at the end of January. Mm-hmm. Having two bloodlines helps gets more out of this. You know, if we're not going to have Roman every single week, at least you can have. At least the rest of the bloodline is also interesting with their sub dynamics. And they announced it later. So not to jump ahead, but they announced the Usos are going to be competing next week on Raw. So that's good. It helps get, you know, that's really good that we can have two different versions of the bloodline. Like you said, it's like, yeah, when the ball shows up, everybody goes from chuckling to standing up straight.
It's almost like when Vince enters a room, everybody changes. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing. Roman enters the room and all of a sudden that dynamic changes. So I like you said, the different presentations of the iterations of the bloodline.
Last thing on this is, and I know what they're doing on commentary, I get it, but I didn't like how everyone kept saying Sammy sold his soul and he betrayed his friend. He was on the Bloodlines team. He was doing what he was supposed to do. He didn't stab anybody in the back. That was his job. Why wouldn't he hit Kevin Owens? If I'm playing for a football team, just because my friend is on the other team doesn't mean I'm not going to tackle him. That's the job.
Well, I totally agree, Jack. I think we heard Kevin was sidelined for a few weeks there or something, maybe physically an injury. I think they probably wanted, my guess is if Kevin was sidelined for a few weeks physically and not able to be there, they probably would have liked to had more weeks to generate some. Is Sammy going to stay loyal to the bloodline? I think they would have tried to make it. Yeah. So I think this is them trying to like still go with the hook of Sammy and Kevin have great history. They just didn't get to build as much, my guess, if Kevin wasn't available.
Yeah. And I get it. I realistically, I give him a pass, but there's that part of me. It's like, hey, now he was doing a good job.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But we talk about teams and sticking together. And Justin, you alluded to this a little bit ago. We got Matt Riddle and Elias backstage, and they're going to get a tag team title shot against the Usos. Jimmy, the thing that stood out for me, obviously the tag team title shot's important, but the thing that stood out for me in this quick little segment is Elias made sure to say, I think of myself as a solo artist before taking the tag team title shot. Are we going to see dissension in the ranks here?
Well, hopefully they can coexist. I hate saying that. But anyways, it definitely was a seed that was planted. So it's making people go, oh, I didn't expect to hear that come out of Elias's mouth. Is there going to be an issue next week? But then again, who knows? Maybe, you know, the Usos have already reached that point where they are, you know, the longest reigning tag team champions in history. Is the time right now to relieve them of those championship titles? I don't think so. I think they can keep going with it. And now that the seed is planted, maybe this is a way to get past that so they can, you know, get past Matt Riddle, their current number one contenders, for lack of a better term, to move on to the next, whoever it's going to be.
Yeah, Justin, I can't imagine the Usos lose the tag team titles to these two. They both feel like they've been waiting for the next thing to happen. So I'm going to ask you, what are the odds that Elias takes out Riddle before the end of next week?
I mean, I think that would be a leading vote getter, because you're not going to have a relatively new piece together tag team of Riddle and Elias end this historic streak from the Usos. But if they want to build around this as a main event match, aside from the attraction of the Usos defending the titles, what's a big way we can go off the air? It would be an Elias heel turn, right? And quite frankly, look, you know, Riddle, again, you know, Riddle's kind of been, you know, just floating around since Orton's, Orton's not around, and, you know, maybe he's done. I don't know. It sucks if that's the case. But, you know, Riddle needs something. Elias is back. He needs something. Riddle's character is just such a baby face character right now. Elias, it can be a face character, but Elias can also play the heel really well, as we've seen. So that would make sense to at least give these two guys something to do, and it'll be playing to their character strengths. So I'd be all for that. Quite frankly, I think that's needed, because I don't think you're gonna really accomplish much or get the same. I don't think you're gonna get the same kind of lightning in a bottle, oddball magic that you got out of RK Bro, out of the pairing of Riddle and Orton. I don't see that happening with the Riddle and Elias. I think you're better off just trying to let them coexist, as Jimmy would say, and then letting it generate into a heel turn and give you a program to play at least until Rumble, and then we see where we're at come Rumble.
Mm-hmm. Something I'm digging about the WWE in this day and age right now is we are building up to the Royal Rumble, and there are so many alliances that feel shaky right now that the Royal Rumble just has a way of breaking off. And so one way or another, I feel like there's a lot of these alliances that are not going to end well come Rumble time.
I mean, bro. the bloodline in the Rumble is going to be fascinating, because think of it. The whole idea of the Rumble is to win it to take on Roman Reigns, assuming he's still champion. Mm-hmm. He will be.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
could you imagine you lose it on like a random SmackDown?
So the entire idea of this match, this hour-long match, is the winner is going to take on Roman at Mania. Mm-hmm. Like, of course he's going to dispatch the bloodline to prevent that. But then, of course, there's the, you know, does somebody in the bloodline get a little greedy? Do they think that they should win it? Ooh. And then does Jay and Sammy start, like, the dynamics that could go into play for again, just that storyline of the bloodline setting up a fort, a wall in that match, trying to just you know, there's all four of them. There's Solo, Sammy, and the Usos just standing there stoic in a line, one competitor after another, and who finally can break that wall. I mean, there could be some fascinating booking there.
Yeah.
Then the glass shatters and it's Stone Cold and he comes out and cleans house. No, I don't think that's gonna happen. In the old days, if this was back in 1998, that's maybe how it would have gone down.
Maybe. Yeah.
back in 98. So in any case, of course they also said earlier today there's no cracks in the armor, which is like famous last words for a group. So
yeah.
Speaking of groups, we got the return of a group. We got Street Profits. They're back and they got cut off by Alpha Academy in a multi-segment match that really lets the new and improved Street Profits, as I'm calling them, highlight their return. Dawkins looking sleeker and fitter, and Ford looking bigger and stronger with that body slam to Otis. Win for the Street Profits, and I have to assume they'll be back in the title picture very soon, which is one of the reasons why I do not think that Elias and Riddle stand a chance. What say you, Jimmy Corderas?
I can't disagree with what you just said there. They did look really good, and especially, you know, there's a difference between getting ready to when you've been off for a while, training in a gym, training in a ring, and actually getting out there and having physical matches. You know, it's a completely different thing altogether. And they look like they hit all the right notes, and they hit their stride pretty much, and didn't look like they've suffering from what's the word I'm looking for a lack of competitiveness. Let's put it that way.
Ring rust.
There you go. Ring rust, man. How did I not see that? But they had a heck of a match. I enjoy the Street Profits, but I really enjoy the Alpha Academy too. For me, they're one of the most underrated teams out there. And Chad Gable is just tremendous. And, a great talent, and I could see a great solo future for him in the future. Give it time, give it some time here with Otis, let something happen there, and then Chad Gable could branch off and become a great, I don't want to say to the stature of Kurt Angle, but he could be a very similar star to Kurt Angle.
Yeah, no, I agree. Chad Gable to me, I picture him, he falls somewhere in a wonderful recipe of part Kurt Angle, part Owen Hart. And so, yeah, I think that he could, as a heel and a face, he could thrive in, as a singles. That's what's so great about him. I could see him as a thriving top baby face. I could, you know, slightly undersized, but damn it, he's tough. But he can also be a thriving chicken shit heel. He's a chicken shit, but also could still kick your ass if he really needs to and wants to actually take the high road and not cheat. I thought this was fun to watch too. Great tag teams. The Street Profits are really entertaining. We've seen some classic matches with them in the Usos. So, you know, again, back to our thread tonight of the Usos. I don't know who's going to actually eventually beat the Usos. I really don't, because I don't think it's going to be a team that they've already had several classic battles with like the Street Profits. So it really makes me wonder the New Day had a chance.
They're kind of similar to Reigns at this point, where we're gonna have to figure out, you know, maybe repeating teams like the Street Profits. I love what you said about Gable, because obviously he's a good bad guy because everyone boos him, but could you imagine? I imagine like an LA Knight talking and then shush and cutting him off, and, you know, coming out and everyone cheering because someone cut off the guy who's talking all the time. I think that would get a big cheer. But yeah, Street Profits, it's almost is Ford bigger than Dawkins now? Ford is just getting bigger and bigger, and Dawkins is getting smaller and smaller. It's almost leaner. Like they're trading, but I think both look good. And so,
yeah,
I mean, to me, they feel like the next up for a tag team title shot, but we'll have to see. Speaking of title shots, we got Austin Theory coming out. He's the now. He's not a kid. He's the face of Raw. And that's when Seth Rollins comes out dressed up in what I assume Jimmy Corderas wears when he's not on the podcast and says that Rollins is the face of Raw. And Seth wants to fight. And Theory says, on my time. Justin, this wasn't a segment that I think we're all going to be riding home about for the next 10 years, but feels like it got me interested in watching these guys have another match.
Yeah, you know, good heel work by Theory. He's getting some of the best heat of anybody. I mean, you know, you look at Theory, Dominic Mysterio. I mean, these are young guys getting some real serious heat consistently. So that was good. I think more people were talking about the segment of what the hell was Seth wearing.
Yeah,
but that's what Seth wanted us to be saying. So job right. well done. By the way, thank you, Manish. On Twitter, Manish is advocating to Sami Zayn for me on Twitter to unblock me. So thank you, Manish.
Nice. I was gonna make the obvious bad joke here, but I think I'm gonna refrain from it because I don't want to start a controversy on here. With Seth Rollins' attire and his wife being labeled the man.
You know, I got to give both these guys credit in this promo, though, because both of them did things that could have gone very flat. And one of them was like, I can't remember what exactly Theory said, but he's like, "Who's an idiot now?" And the audience all at once said, "You!" And like, that's something that could have just gotten boos or whatever, but the audience got it. They responded. Mm-hmm. And later when Seth Rollins was like, "Shut up and let them sing," and they all just like hit the beat at the right time and sang his music. Like, they, like, we talk about people who can play crowds. They both played the crowd very well. And I mean that in a good way, played the crowd very well to get the exact reactions they were looking for throughout this, and just great work.
Yeah. And, you know, and, with, Austin Theory saying that he's no longer the kid, and Seth, you know, calling him kid, trying to provoke him, trying to get him, instigate the contact, and it didn't work. And like you said, you know, Austin saying, you know, "You can have a match on when I say so," you know, that kind of thing. So it worked. It wasn't like blow away, but again, it was effective.
Yeah. So we get the blow off, at least I assume, with Miz versus Dexter Lumis. Miz tries to fake the injury again. This time Adam Pearce says, "Nope, not going to work." So we get the match. Miz puts Dexter Lumis's head in a vise at one point. They fight in the crowd. Eventually Dexter Lumis gets the win and gets the contract. Eventually they, Lumis hands some money out to some kids. Miz attacks Dexter from behind, but Gargano shows up and super kicks the Miz and hands the money back. Justin, now that we've, at least I think, seen it all, how do you rate this rivalry and how do you feel like it paid off?
I think that they, for what I imagine, was something that maybe started that I don't think they knew what the ending was. I give them credit for trying to, you know, I give them credit for drawing it and trying to make it a big deal. You know, they made this a match that they really strung along and made it a big deal when Dexter finally gets a match with Miz. A little nitpick thing. All right. If such a big part of this whole fiasco is Dexter's pursuit of being, having a contract and being a superstar again, why does he have music? Why does he have an entrance video? Why does he have graphics? I mean, that's just, you know, I don't always nitpick to that stuff, but that's a major. There's a damn contract sitting outside the ring, you know, with WWE official Adam Pearce there to you know, to notarize, so to speak. So if that's that big of a deal, I think something like that should be accounted for. Why does he have, you know, he should be brought in, no lights, no music, or escorted in by security because he's still the rogue outsider. I don't know, something that nitpicking. Overall, yeah, though,
but fair,
right? You know,
yeah.
But overall, I thought this was good. I thought the crowd eventually came along. At first, they were kind of like, again, it was almost like the crowd was looking at each other like, you know, when Lumis is doing these things to the Miz in the match finally now, and the crowd's kind of like looking at each other like, is it okay for us to cheer him? Because, again, this is the guy who, he looks like a psychopath. He's been stalking the Miz. We now know the Miz has been, you know, taking advantage of him. So there's supposed to be that sympathy, but still it took the crowd a little bit. And then they just wanted to chant for tables. We finally got tables. Then they popped. And then to really endear himself to the crowd, he's handing out money to the kids.
Right.
What a charitable episode for the Norfolk crowd. Get to partake in a promo with Becky, get a $100 bill for your ringside attendance. I think overall they did the best they could with this. That this should be the blow off. I got to give a great shout out to Dexter Lumis. The way he moves that fist crawl and the way he gets in and out of the ring and slithers. Again, the crowd kind of seemed a little apprehensive of, do we treat him like a baby face? We'll see where he goes in general in his booking. But I thought overall Dexter Lumis maximized his minutes, made the most of his debut Monday Night Raw match.
Yeah, Jimmy, at the very least, Dexter's been given every opportunity to succeed. Sometimes people are presented and we're like, you didn't really give him a chance, you know? Right. Dexter Lumis and Johnny Gargano in this case has had the chance. I mean, Miz obviously has had the chance, so we don't need to talk about him, but they've had the chance. What do you think's next for them? Do you think they're going to become a tag team? Do you think they go their separate ways? Do you think this is over? What follows this part of the story?
That's the big question. And because of Dexter Lumis's persona, I can't see him being a tag team with someone, at least not right now, especially someone like a Johnny Gargano, a really good guy. For Johnny, obviously, I could see him and The Miz getting into a rivalry. You're the one who sold me out. You're the one who stooged me off, whatever the case may be. So, you know, he has an issue with Johnny Gargano, and those two can get together. As I think the presentation for Dexter Lumis creates a bigger challenge on who they should pair him with and how they could make it work. Because he looked very, very, like, psychotic, as we were saying. He no-sold a lot of stuff, including that C-clamp vice thing on his head. And, you know,
yeah.
So it's going to be difficult booking going forward and how to get people to believe that they're actually getting heat on him.
Yeah. I don't like to, they coulda, woulda, shoulda things, but I was thinking it would have been fun. You know, Adam Pearce is there with the contract, super excited, with a big smile on his face. I would have loved it if Dexter Lumis signed the contract and then attacked Adam Pearce. And then Gargano comes out, like, what are you doing? And then he attacks Gargano. And they're like, oh, that's right. He's a psychopath. Why did we sign this guy? Now he's stuck with us. Now we're stuck with him. And we got to deal with this guy. And then he could move into being a psychopath to everybody. And that they're stuck with because they signed the contract. Because we all got kind of fooled into thinking he's a good guy just because we don't like The Miz.
Yeah,
but I digress.
Jack, actually, I love that fantasy booking there. I mean, the challenge with Dexter Lumis is going to be, and I watched him in NXT, and I know they made it. You know, they even, you know, progressed into a love story in NXT with Indy Hartwell. So I know that they have options that they've gone down the path with to try to do it to make it work with him. But he really is, a rare situation. He is a very like 1990 Undertaker kind of situation of like. You're this guy whose whole shtick is he's not going to sell a lot. He's supposed to look scary as hell, but at least in this situation, he's on the babyface side of the fence. So, you know, obviously Undertaker was a very rare, spectacular, generational, business-changing character. So maybe Dexter Lumis might be the most interesting project to watch between now and just Rumble to see how they make the most of him week to week to week. Again, because this is a guy who was released as part of pandemic cuts under Vince's regime, who Triple H has made a point to bring back and build this. This story started in July. This was the first story that started when Triple H took over. This one was one of the first long-term stories. So, like, this was a guy that Triple H felt heavily, you know, tied to, I'm bringing him back. So he's here for a reason. So right. I'll be really curious to see what the plan is moving forward with him now that we've assumingly moved past The Miz.
Well, especially since so much he needs someone to be able to talk like based on his character. I can't imagine him carrying any type of feud or rivalry. So you need to have someone who's going to, for whatever reason, pick a fight with him. And antagonize him.
Yeah, you almost need somebody who's like also crazy that could speak for you. You almost need like a Nikki Cross, somebody who like speaks, but is just as crazy that only they understand. Just by he can make one look at them, and then they can cut a promo saying, "This is what Dexter just said to me."
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing too, is where he goes for in the promo department, because what you say is just as important as what you do.
Right. And what he did was hand out money from a bag, and Dylan Matthews in the chat says that handbag looked fake as hell.
Well, I'm not an expert on what was it? Was it Louis Vuitton?
Well, the $100 that was a real $100 bill.
Yeah, that's wasn't the one with JBL on it.
I was going to say, it sure looked like those were real $100 bills, which, by the way, I do think, though, it was a great touch having Miz take the bill away, which was like, what a jerk, and then giving it back, right, like to help Johnny get some love. I thought that was a very brilliant way to do some work there to make you hate the Miz again for taking money, but then also the kids still got the money, and it wasn't
right.
Yeah, it was all good stuff there. We had a match. Candice LeRae is back, and she's taking it to Dakota Kai. They have a match, and it's a pretty long one with Candice LeRae getting the win here. Justin, did this one do it for you?
No.
Yeah. Take it away.
Nope. And I like both of these ladies. I think they're both worthy of being on the roster. I like the look that they each have. I like the arsenal in the ring. I don't have any real problem with either of them, but I don't know. I found myself I was not moved by this match at all. So,
I mean, there's a reason my question was, did this do it for you? Because I think I'm with you where, like, I like the people, and the match is fine. Jimmy, I don't know. Maybe it's because it feels like Dakota Kai is eating a lot of L's. Maybe it's because I don't really know where Candice LeRae fits and everything. Maybe it's because it just felt like a long episode, but this one didn't really hit for me.
I think it's D, all of the above. It was just one of those situations where, like you said, the match wasn't bad. It wasn't that the match was bad. It just, there were no stakes to it. It felt like a match that was put together to fill TV time. They had to fill the 3 hours. And that's how it felt to me. Nothing wrong with how the ladies worked. Nothing wrong with the match itself. It just, again, there was nothing to draw me, to get me invested in the match. Other than the fact that, hey, they're having a pretty good match.
Yeah, I think even if, like, Candice LeRae had a friend that I would think could be a potential tag team partner to go after the tag team titles with or something, but it definitely felt like the outcome of this match doesn't really mean anything
right
at this point.
Yeah.
But again, I best, you know, nothing but good thoughts for them. I just didn't really work for me. Bianca, Asuka, and Bliss are backstage, and Bianca kind of takes all the credit for the War Games and bringing back Becky Lynch. And I assume Asuka was okay with it. I don't know what she really said, though. Alexa, though, clearly had something else on her mind. Jimmy, Twitter is a buzz about what could be going on with Alexa Bliss. Is she going to turn on her friends? Is she going to go after the title? Is she maybe listening to Bray Wyatt? Lots of people with different ideas. What do you think is going on?
I think it could be any of those things. And that's the beauty of it. You talk about not being sure, but you can tell definitely that she wasn't happy about the situation. And that's the main thing. And is there were little clues with Bray Wyatt being involved. Maybe he's in her ear, and maybe they reform a partnership. Let's put it that way. And that's what I like about it. I like mystery. I don't like things being so... this is going to happen, and this is the way it's going to happen. We may see things like, for example, a heel turn or a babyface turn coming, but you don't know how it's going to happen. And that's what I love about this. I can see it coming, but I don't know how it's going to happen.
Yeah, the same way we had the Easter eggs leading up to Bray's return with the QR codes and such. As soon as the camera panned over real quick to Alexa on the screen behind her, very quick. If you blinked, you literally would have missed it. Very quick distortion on the video, and Bray Wyatt symbols appeared real quick. And then, she went into the, she was kind of zoning and not really paying attention. So just those little things to keep you watching.
So That'll be fun to see play out. But we get a main event here, and it's Kevin Owens versus main event Jey Uso. And it has quite a lot of super kicks in it for it not being an AEW show. But KO gets the win and gets one up on the Bloodline.
Less leg slapping, though.
I poke fun, but we do give AEW a hard time for the super kicks. But I was watching this, I was like, geez, these guys are going super kick crazy too. I guess it's just everybody these days.
It's not just the super kick, it's how you execute the super kick.
But here's the thing though, I gotta give KO credit for the way he sells the super kick, because he doesn't do the big floppy flat back or whatever and stuff like that. He sells it like he got his lights out.
He buckles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you actually got that kick, you're gonna buckle. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna fly like a. You're gonna buckle.
Yeah,
it was awesome the way he sold them. I thought anyway.
This one, kind of contrary to the match we just talked about, this is one that I think we kind of expected Kevin Owens to win. And I don't think he's going to get a tag team title shot or anything like that, but you can kind of see where they're going with this. Probably Kevin Owens going through the Bloodline to get to Roman Reigns. And even though we've seen it already, it was 800 days ago. So I think I'm okay with it happening again. Justin, what was your takeaway on this one?
This was a fantastic match. I mean, yeah, I mean, this, you know, these guys, they ran right up against the clock. They literally, they had some stuff planned. They went right up against the clock. They got it all in, though. The crowd was so into this. All the falsies and commentary. Corey Graves doing a great job. You know, how does Kevin Owens still, you know, I mean, really, this was a really well done for a main event that at the end of the day, like, you know, there's no title in the line. There's no stakes. This was again, just from the jaw jacking that happened earlier in the night. For a main event that has so little on the line, they made this feel like such a big deal. You know, a really great job by all parties involved, especially Kevin and Jey. I got to give also a shout out Kevin's bump that he does. You know, Flair's famous for the, you know, whip him into the corner. He flips over onto the apron, up at the top rope, and all. Shawn became famous for the whip in the corner. He inverts himself upside down. And then Kevin has his own version of inverts himself and then takes his back bump in the corner. And that corner, by the way, folks, is a hard part of the ring. That's not a part of the ring you're meant to back bump on, but he does. And every time I see it, I'm like, good. You know, Kevin Owens more and more tonight. And Jimmy kind of alluded to earlier with the selling the super kick, and the way Kevin takes and sells some things, you know, I know he gets a little bit of the Stone Cold rub because of the Mania match and the stunner finish. The way KO takes some things and sells some things, he gives me a Mick Foley-esque vibe. He puts some body first at times that makes you just go, ooh, makes you just cringe. But it gives me that Foley feeling of, you know, nice analogy. Yeah, you know, that's, but overall, this was for a main event that I knew that was not going to matter in the grand scheme of things, in terms of it was really well done by both these guys. Coming off 40 commentary sold it 48 hours off of, they just did a pretty brutal gimmick match.
Yeah. And I like that they were given the times too, like Jey Uso in there for 38 minutes. You're like, geez, 38 minutes is a long time to be in a, as Justin says, a brutal match, not just like, you know, a match where you can just sort of hang out in the corner and no one will notice you for a little bit, but like you're getting beat up in that, in that thing. Jimmy, is there a, it feels like KO versus Roman Reigns at Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I can see that happening. It definitely, we keep talking about seeds being planted, but that would be a perfect road leading up to WrestleMania. You need someone like a Kevin Owens who has, been elevated the last, I don't know how many months now, to a spot where, you know, he belongs in the ring with the Roman Reigns. And I can imagine the verbal confrontations between these two to draw an audience in, because we talk about talking people into the seats. These two can talk people into wanting to see this match. And again, tonight, I think it was a perfect thing and a perfect way to begin that journey to that match. And maybe they do have that match at the Royal Rumble where Roman defends against Kevin Owens. And not to fantasy book way ahead of time, let's say Roman manages to get by that match with KO. That match ain't going to close the show. The Royal Rumble match is going to close the show. And maybe Kevin tries to re-enter the Rumble and you know, get some of his magic back. And that's where there's more stuff going on. But yeah, I could definitely see him and Roman in the future. That would get me interested. That's for sure.
This is totally random, but I got this question on Twitter from Kasim Goodridge, at Goodridge Kasim, I should say. Mm-hmm. And Justin, I just want your opinion on it. Again, not anything we've talked about yet, but what is the cutoff date, do you think, for Rock to make an appearance if he's going to be at WrestleMania? Like, how far along this journey to WrestleMania do we get before we go, okay, it's too late?
Well, that is a very interesting question. So you have Rumble. They are doing Elimination Chamber again in Montreal in February. Mm-hmm. I would say the night after Chamber because which the fact they're doing Chamber is interesting because normally, traditionally, if you had two world champions, winner of the Rumble sets her sight on one world champion, and then the other world championship picture gets decided out of Elimination Chamber. Mm-hmm. Roman Reigns is carrying both world titles as it stands right now. Does that continue on? That's a big question. So I would say the night after Chamber, the Raw after, I don't know where Chamber's in Montreal. I don't know where the next night is, but
it is. Never mind.
Yeah.
The night before is Montreal because it's two nights in Montreal, SmackDown and the Chamber.
Yeah. But wherever the Raw is the next night or the that Monday, that would be the cutoff, right? Because at that point, you have a Rumble winner and whatever that's going to mean, and then you have a Chamber winner. So Rock would need to show up at the latest by the next night, I think, at that point to impose his position if he's going to. So that's the cutoff. So chat room, somebody give me the Chamber date. Mm-hmm. It would be the Monday after that. Beyond that, I don't know why you have him.
I would assume it would be Ottawa because, in proximity, because obviously you want something that's not too far away. Yeah. So it would either be Ottawa or Quebec City, in my opinion.
And now keep in mind, too, we've seen this when they go to Canada. And this is where real life starts to fall into things. The Usos don't normally come to Canada lately because to enter Canada, there's certain rules and designations. Right. On your record, and they unfortunately, that's a problem with the record. So that's another thing too. You're building this whole thing in the bloodline. You got to have strength in numbers and whatever. So you got to have all your participants. So just something else. I hate to bring that stuff in, but that is real life. It's a real thing. So,
It is interesting. We'll definitely have to see how that plays out. I think that does it for our show. For me, this episode, and Justin and Jimmy, obviously giving you your kind of wrap ups and where the world can find you. But for me, this episode, I feel like it started fast and hot and I was like super into it. And then it felt like it just sort of lulled. And then the main event was great, which I guess you remember the beginning and the end. So
the two most important parts of the show, right?
Yes. So I guess I'll probably end up saying it was good, but for me, it definitely felt like in the middle, I was like, this is starting to drag a little bit, but Justin, what about you? What were your thoughts and where can the world find you online?
Overall, it was an okay Raw. Again, we have a long kind of path. We have a long path. We don't have any premium live event to build to until Rumble. So, they're going to be having to, I guess, make payoff matches happen on Raw and make some kind of mini storylines and mini cycles before we get to Rumble happen. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm curious. There's little things with Bray Wyatt, little Easter eggs we talked about. So we'll keep checking it out, but it certainly is a lot more interesting than it was this time last year. So I'll give that. at Justin Labar across all the social medias. I'll be back here Wednesday night for the post Dynamite podcast with Jimmy and Issa, I believe. And I think I'll be on Friday morning on Busted Open Radio, channel 156 on Sirius XM. So again, at Justin Labar across the socials, that's the best place to be. Shoot me nice tweets like Mad Mike did earlier, our mailman who's listening to us.
There you go.
Absolutely. And Jimmy, how about you? Where can the world find you? And what were your final thoughts on this episode?
Well, again, I thought it was an okay Raw, and it started, it planted seeds for the future, and that's what they have to do. They sometimes people expect dynamite after a nice explosion, but
wrong show, wrong company.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was okay, and it planted some seeds, and it has me looking forward to potential matchups. And as far as where people can find me, you can find me here on Monday nights and Wednesday nights, usually covering Raw and Dynamite respectively. And some pay-per-views like we did this past Saturday where we covered the Survivor Series. And you can catch me weekdays on all my social media platforms doing my daily ref and rants from Monday to Friday, where, again, I make my little critiques, but it's not to tear down. It's to help, improve what is a great time for wrestling. And you can get your ref and rant t-shirts at prowrestlingtees.com as well. Mugs, not yet. This one was made special for me from the wife.
So tough luck. You can't have one. All the other merch is available.
Yeah. Though.
Definitely check that out. You can, of course, find me at Real Jack Farm across all social media. Make sure to follow at Wrestling Inc. for all the different after shows that we're doing and all the news and stuff that's happening there. Thank you to everyone who is listening later. Like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star review. Thank you to everyone who is in the chat. Adam, Sabas, Ricky, Baby Ice, Dream Realm Studios, Ian. We got Adam, Steven, Tuck, Graf, and everyone else. Elizabeth, Vulture Talks, everyone else. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow, I guess, for the NXT After Show. That does it for us. We'll see y'all later.
Somebody find Bobby going live. He's